Halloween is coming, and it looks like one of the scariest places in the world right now is the near-deserted 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Washington, D.C., the residence of a COVID-infected fake president, which people in hazmat suits are now attempting to disinfect. Just 20-something days remaining until the U.S. election, and it seems that all hell has broken loose, and this is just after the beginning of this contracina that often has a certain amount of, well, recklessness associated with it. Welcome to the 15th edition of Navigating the Energies of Life, a podcast that looks at how the energies of the Maya calendar are at work in the world and how they apply to daily lives. This is Marguerite Paquin, continuing with this podcast to accompany my horoscope blog that tracks the days of this calendar. We'll be looking at the factors that tie in with that recklessness and other things that are a little more promising as we look more closely at this time frame. Had lots of smoke around here recently, swept up from those dreadful fires in California over the past few days that irritated my throat, but things are starting to clear, so fingers crossed. For anyone who might be newly joining us, we're working here with a calendrical system that has at its core a cycle of 260 days that involves the interconnecting and cycling of 20 unique solar forces in combination with 13 unique numerical powers to create a count of days called a Zolkin. Each of the 260 days in the cycle is unique, and every person carries the energetic imprint of the forces that were in play at the time of their birth. Those energies greatly influence how people see the world and interact within it. Both the blog and this podcast follow the Mesoamerican calendrical tradition of timekeeping involving tracinas, 13-day periods, each of which has a particular theme that ties in with the initiating energy, or the first day, of whatever tracina we happen to be in. This current tracina began on October the 4th with one con, an initiating energy associated with germination. Mythologically, this is the moon goddess working with the young corn god to propagate life and open up the potential for abundance. This is the Maya birth energy of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who served as a justice in Washington, D.C. for 40 years. First, in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, and then as a Supreme Court Justice, where she served for 27 years, becoming its most prominent member, before her passing last month at age 87. Even though diminutive and soft-spoken, she became a fierce and dearly loved champion for gender equality and civil liberties, even reaching rock star status, as she became known as the notorious RBG. Her passing was a huge blow to millions who were praying that she would make it to at least 90, as she herself hoped she would. Just days before her death, she told her granddaughter that her most fervent wish was to not be replaced in the Supreme Court until a new president is installed. But, as usual, the Republican weasels in Washington are doing everything they can to try to not honor her wish. During this past tracina, there were many tributes to her, including a ceremony at the Supreme Court, and her lying in state in National Statuary Hall at the U.S. Capitol, as she became the first female government official and first Jewish American to do so. even these events tie in with her one con birth energy, as the energy of number one is the initiating energy, the energy of first. Rest in peace, dear Ruth. The start of this Trisena also coincided with World Animal Day and the feast day of St. Francis of Assisi, the patron saint of animals and the environment, a time for many blessing of the animals events. This is a day when animals are often brought into churches and other sanctuaries to be honored and blessed. But with COVID around, much of this didn't happen this year. Nevertheless, St. John the Divine in New York did publish a virtual blessing service on YouTube, where they spoke about the nature of St. Francis and the intent of this day, which was to honor the dignity of every person on this earth and the dignity of all creation, to give thanks for all creation, and to celebrate all living beings and life in all its forms. The video is very soothing, very peaceful, very respectful. I'm including a link to it in the podcast post on my site. It seemed fitting that this would tie in with One Con this year, as Con is definitely associated with an exuberance for life and the celebration of the bounties of the earth. In fact, Con is so oriented around that kind of celebration that it sometimes seems that there are no boundaries. It's often even associated with over-the-top, outrageous wealth. But because this energy is so oriented towards this kind of expansion, which seems to get bigger and bigger as the Trisena moves forward, it can become quite vigorous and even quite reckless at times. I noted in my blog that in ancient Mesoamerica, a rather formidable deity known as Itzlacolique, the god of frost, was seen as one of the patrons of this period. He was a strange-looking entity, very pale and otherworldly-looking. His face is generally portrayed as a blindfolded, curved, sharp, black obsidian blade, which was traditionally thought to represent this deity's blindness to the hardships that might be inflicted on farmers and their families by a bad frost that might destroy their vulnerable crops. According to legend, he is a variant, perhaps the flip side or dark side, of the deity known as Tlahuitzcalpantecutli, Lord of the Dawn, or Venus, who, after a shooting match with the sun god Tonatcha during the creation of the fifth world, was punished by Tonatcha and transformed into Itzlacolique, god of stone and coldness. This was seen as the reason for it being chilly at dawn during part of the year. So this was caused by this frost god. But eventually he would leave, and then the farmers could begin sowing the seeds for their crops. There's a kind of delicate balance here, as frost was not necessarily bad. If timed right, it was thought to be like rain, adding moisture to the earth, which was needed for a good harvest. Snow, in fact, was seen as an omen for eventually good crops. This god of frost was generally shown carrying a broom, symbolic of the idea of sweeping something clean, even sweeping away sins in order to prepare for the germination of the bounty to come. There's an image of this in my blog. The general idea is to carefully nurture, but not endanger, new opportunities. You might say it's representative of cautious optimism, as there is tremendous potential here. But at this stage, caution is needed, or all that potential could be lost. Tied in with these ideas, there's often an emphasis on working with the unseen or the unknown during this period. The first day of this time frame, this time around, also seemed to tie in with that idea when a group called COVID Survivors for Change, a network of coronavirus survivors and victims' families, set up some 20,000 empty chairs on the lawn facing the White House to represent the over 200,000 people who have died from the virus in the U.S. It was being observed as a national day of remembrance to mark this enormous loss of lives, and to draw attention to the fact that there has been no communal mourning and very few public remembrances since the pandemic began. So it was a sea of black empty chairs. No people sitting in them because they had vanished. All were now unseen. And as far as the unknowns, there are so many at this time. Not only is there a raging pandemic out there, but there is a super spreader, infector in chief in the White House, whose every waking moment is characterized by recklessness and sheer stupidity. Someone who is incapable of understanding the meaning of the word caution. Someone whom many are now calling homicidal for his callousness in allowing so many people to die when much could have been done to prevent it. The word COVIDiot is now being used as well, since his actions are putting so many people, even in his immediate vicinity, at risk. At a special meeting of the World Health Organization leaders just yesterday, a top official said that 1 in 10 people around the world may have contracted COVID-19 and that the vast majority of the world remains at risk. The number of confirmed cases globally is over 35 million by now. I think it's maybe up to 36 million today. But the World Health Organization estimates that the true figure is closer to 800 million, which is approximately 1 in 10 people globally. Over 1 million people globally have lost their lives. Many countries are acknowledging a second wave and are acting accordingly. Bars and restaurants are closing in Paris. Residents of the Spanish capital of Madrid are restricted from non-essential travel. Iran is closing schools, libraries, mosques, and other public institutions. But what's happening in the U.S., the country with the highest number of confirmed cases and by far the highest death toll? That country has a president, or shall I say fake president, who has the disease but is still playing it down. At the last count, at least 20 people in his close circle and counting have tested positive, many of whom have been at his recent events. How many more will there be in the coming days? Now, not to frighten you, but rather to make you aware, in terms of the sequence of days in the Maya calendar, and this Tristina in particular, the third day of this time frame is often a critical point. If you heard my last podcast for the Xuan Tristina, I was talking about the creation sequence in Maya mythology that began at the beginning of that last Tristina, which started on September 21st. This is a continuation of that sequence. And the third day of this time frame, known as 3 Kimi, is representative of the activation of death or absolute foundations, as in spiritual foundations. As I record this, this energy is just phasing out as the next day's energy begins coming in. But on this day, we had returned to the energies associated with the day that was seen traditionally and mythologically as the day when the first death was invented. And it has now been one cycle exactly since a 35-year-old man in Washington State, who had recently returned home after visiting family in Wuhan, China, became the first person in the U.S. to be diagnosed with COVID-19. At that time, the first confirmed case was reported in South Korea, and China began warning the world about the coronavirus. This current three-kimi was marked by the quarantining of all the U.S. Pentagon's Joint Chiefs of Staff, including its top general, after Admiral Ray, a top Coast Guard official, tested positive. He had been at an event at the White House on September 27th. I know, it's all too insane for words. I should also mention that in 1918, the first mention of the Spanish flu also happened on a three-kimi day. And as it happened, those warnings from Washington and Wuhan in January coincided with the third anniversary of the virus in chief's inauguration, an event that many have called one of the darkest days in the history of the U.S. Note as well that in 1934, Hitler became Führer of Germany under this influence. And last January, this was the eve of the start of the impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate. I use the word trial lightly because it was only a sham. Witnesses were not allowed to testify, even though 75% of registered voters, bipartisan, thought witnesses should have been allowed. And McTurtle, as many people refer to the Senate Republican leader, didn't even submit the rules for the trial until the 11th hour, because he wanted a significant part of the trial to be conducted after midnight. He not only left open the possibility that they could decline to hear any new evidence and might not even allow the existing evidence from the House inquiry that led to the House impeachment, but he also directed that the House had to make its presentation over a period not to exceed 24 hours, over no more than two session days. Just a complete sham, all designed to hide the truth from the American people. By contrast, on this current three-kimi day, Joe Biden delivered an address from Gettysburg as he stood at the same place where Abraham Lincoln stood on a seven-kimi day in 1863. Invoking Abraham Lincoln, Biden said, "Today, once again, we are a house divided, but that can no longer be." He praised Lincoln as a president who reimagined America itself, one who believed in the rescue, redemption, and rededication of the Union. As Lincoln had done, so Biden called upon our better angels to prevail, even against our worst impulses, to make a new and better nation. "They must prevail again now," he said. As it happened, former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan died exactly two cycles before that, under this same three-kimi energy influence. He was the world's top diplomat for 10 years, from 1997 to 2006, and a Nobel Peace Prize laureate, who was well known for quietly reminding world leaders that they needed to put their duty to their citizens above their political careers. Something the infector-in-chief has never, ever done. And by the way, lest we forget, on that same Thurikimi day when those COVID warnings were given last January, security forces down south were busy firing tear gas at the hundreds of migrants who were attempting to wade across a river to try to get into Mexico at their southern border. Migrants who were part of a 2,000 to 3,500 person group dubbed 2020 Caravan that had crossed into Guatemala from Honduras during the previous few days. One has to ask, where are those migrants now, and how are they doing? And what about the immigrant children who have been held by U.S. detention centers? So many travesties. As we move into Four Manique on October 7th, we're back to the energy that was in place at the start of the impeachment trial last January. This is a defining kind of energy associated with the sun, a kind of harmonizing energy connected with the natural world. But there's also a strong sacrificial aspect to it as well. When this was in place last time, Trump was busy downplaying China's coronavirus warnings at the same time as praising President Xi's actions in this regard. Although there is often a reciprocity aspect to this energy, there can also be a seesaw kind of quality to it as well. This is the day for the vice presidential debate between Kamala Harris and Mike Pence. So we'll see how that works out. Go get 'em, Kamala. This is also George Floyd's Maya birth energy, coming in at this key time, just 1 week before his 47th Gregorian birthday. Interesting that these are so close together at this very critical time. One of the unknowns in this regard might be, to what extent will the Black Lives Matter movement tie in with other events at this time, especially on the day of George Floyd's Gregorian birthday? When we come to 5 Lamat on October the 8th, we'll be working with a beacon or heralding type of force, when important pronouncements are often made. One cycle ago, the Deceptor-in-Chief made his first public comment regarding the coronavirus under this influence, saying that they had it totally under control. He's rarely, if ever, acknowledged the tens of thousands of people who have died from this disease since then, and has continued to downplay it even as he was leaving the hospital yesterday so that he could go back to the White House to continue putting people at risk. Although it seems that many have already left that sinking ship. The following day will be Six Muluk, which is an all-directions shape-shifting kind of energy related to water, now precisely one cycle since the city of Wuhan in China, the most populous city in central China, was put under the biggest lockdown in the history of the world in an effort to stop the spread of coronavirus. And it worked. It was a severe 76-day quarantine that was strictly enforced, and the results were impressive, as the curve flattened significantly by taking those severe measures at that time. 7 months later, reports from Wuhan were showing people out having fun without having to wear masks or social distance. But this example has been largely ignored elsewhere, and the worldwide total number of cases is now over 36 million as of this day. By the end of this decennia, Brazil will be over 5 million, and the U.S. will be within shouting distance of 8 million cases. The midpoint of this decennia is Seven Oak on October the 10th, which marks two cycles since a petition was delivered to the U.S. Congress, that was in May last year, on behalf of a number of activist groups such as Move On, Democracy for America, and the Courage Campaign, that contained 10 million signatures, 10 million, that called upon lawmakers to begin impeachment proceedings against Trump. By this time, 803 former federal prosecutors from both parties who had served in different positions all across the country had signed the document that stated that the factual details contained in the Mueller report would be grounds for indicting the Orange Menace on multiple felony charges for obstruction of justice. Former FBI Director James Comey echoed this when he said that there was sufficient evidence to support that, and that there were at least two incidents that prove criminal intent. Fast forwarding to one cycle later brings us to this past January, as Adam Schiff summed up the Democrats' case for impeachment during that sham trial with a powerful argument for Trump's removal. He said, "Everyone knows Trump is guilty and therefore needs to be removed." He even pointed to the 2020 election and asked pointedly, "Can you have the least bit of confidence that this president will stand up to Russia and protect the national interests of the U.S. over his own personal interests?" He then said, "You know you can't," which makes him dangerous to this country. He ended by saying that, "If all that doesn't matter, then the country is lost." That was one cycle ago, 260 days, as he was speaking to Republican senators who were not listening because they had been so brainwashed and intimidated. And on that same day, Trump again praised China's efforts and transparency regarding the developing coronavirus crisis, and thanked President Xi again for China's response to the situation. It was an opportunity to show, perhaps, that he might be able to rise to meet the forthcoming crisis, but everyone knows now how quickly that was flushed away. Everyone has seen that he will never, ever put anything above his own personal interests. His niece, Mary Trump, has confirmed this again and again. Her recent book, Too Much and Never Enough, which details how her family created the world's most dangerous man, her words, is being seen as a textbook guide to the psychosis that has been playing out on the world stage. And she has both the personal and professional credentials to tell it like it is. Fast forward one more cycle, and here we are, with a massive, massive body count, rampant unemployment and downsliding world economies, environmental devastation on a head-spinning scale, with the reputation of the U.S. as a trustworthy power thoroughly trashed. All because of a spineless few who were unwilling to live up to their oath of office and protect the country. So key questions at this point include, how many more people are going to succumb to this? How many more people are not going to be able to afford healthcare in the U.S.? What happens if even more key people in key positions succumb, as reported today and mentioned earlier? Many from the White House have tested positive, and the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the Pentagon are almost all under quarantine. What's likely to happen with regard to the U.S. Supreme Court? How will the U.S. election campaigns be affected by recent developments? What's happening at the White House with regard to protecting staff and visitors? How will all this affect the U.S. and global economies? How might all this impact the forthcoming presidential election? So here we are in the contracena that traditionally was often seen as a time of testing, as new possibilities begin to take shape and the process of nurturing new endeavors begins. In Maya mythology, that metaphor of the god of frost lurking in the background, representing that possible connection with coldness and even blindness, including blindness to truth, remind us to take care at this time. We need to carefully nurture, but not endanger, new opportunities. Note that in ancient manuscripts, this deity is often shown holding a broom, symbolic of the idea of sweeping something clean, even sweeping away sins in order to prepare for the germination of the bounty to come. Everyone needs to pick up a broom immediately and start sweeping. Sweep away the virus. Sweep away the pain. Sweep away the hatred and the racism and the bigotry and the spinelessness and the ignorance, especially the ignorance. Sweep the virus in chief right out of the White House. Sweep away everything that is trying to feed the darkness and block the light. Sweep like you've never swept before. In my blog, I noted a second patron aligned with this time frame who was known as Black Smoking Mirror, representative of the mysteries of the cosmos and the fate of the Earth. Under the current circumstances, this seems particularly apropos. Working in tandem, these patron energies could be seen as formidable. They are taskmasters that are there to get people's attention, calling people to wake up before it's too late. Keep in mind that there is a possibility that many new avenues could open up during this period if the things that restrict life can be dealt with and swept away. It is a tall order, but the stakes have never been higher. Joe Biden is there to help. Kamala Harris is primed and ready. Most certainly, whatever happens during this period will set the stage for the highly significant Cabanatracena that will follow during the second half of October, right before that election. In the blog, I mentioned other turning points that have happened in the past during this period. the Saturday night massacre related to Watergate that eventually led to Nixon's resignation, the Scorched Earth campaign during the U.S. Civil War that led to the defeat of the Confederacy. Keep in mind as well that this is the Contracina, a time when it is possible to plant the seeds to start the process of germinating new ideas, to set the course for new directions. In the past, a number of influential energies that were embryonic to important world-oriented developments have been brought into play. Now is the time to do so again. Getting back to the energies in play, on October 12th, we have the Canadian Thanksgiving coming in on a 9-ebb day, which has a healing quality to it. That's also Columbus Day in some states, but that's being more and more downplayed in favor of Indigenous Peoples Day, to celebrate the Indigenous peoples of the Americas, and El Dia de la Raza, or Hispanic Heritage Day, which highlights the heritage and cultural diversity of Latin Americans, wherever they may live, and to recognize their resistance to the infiltration of Europeans. These kinds of celebrations can be very, very healing, but may have to be done virtually this year before we can safely bring back large cultural gatherings. But find some way to acknowledge this heritage. Do some more sweeping to help clean out the influences that have tried so hard in the past to eradicate the rich legacies of the vast range of Indigenous nations that populated the Americas before Europeans brought death and destruction to these lands. Now, Ten Ban on October 13th is associated with foundational personal authority, symbolic of the full authority of maize or corn, a strong pillar type of energy representative of strength, inner power, and self-determination. This is the Maya birth energy of José Andrés, the founder of World Central Kitchen, a not-for-profit, non-governmental organization devoted to providing meals in the wake of natural disasters. This was founded in 2010 by celebrity chef Andrés, who jumped in with this organization to prepare food in Haiti following the devastating earthquake that year. It's often a first responder to a disaster, as it works with local chefs to work out how to find solutions to hunger immediately following a disaster. World Central Kitchen leapt in immediately to help Puerto Rico in 2017 after it was hit by Hurricane Maria. This organization served more than 2 million meals in the first month after the hurricane. A true hero and humanitarian. Moving on to the 11th day, 11 Ish, or inspirational magic, on what would have been George Floyd's 47th Gregorian birthday. Just 20 days at this point before the election. I would say expect more demonstrations. The following day, which is 12 Men or Eagle, associated with High Vision, on October 15th, was to be the second presidential debate. Not sure what's going to happen there. It certainly won't be the same as the first, if it happens at all. At this point, it's been one cycle exactly since the day in January when the head of the World Health Organization's Health Emergencies Program said that the whole world needs to be on alert. At that point, entire cities in China were under shutdown. And Peter Navarro, the White House trade advisor, circulated a memo at the highest level warning the White House about the risks of a pandemic. But as usual, the virus in chief downplayed it. Now, 260 days after that memo was circulated, everyone who works there or visits there is at high, high risk of contacting it, if they haven't already done so. As CNN's Jake Tapper put it, Trump's diagnosis was a symbol of his own administration's failure with regard to the pandemic response. The following day brings us to one cycle since the World Health Organization declared a global health emergency with regard to the coronavirus outbreak. By that time, from the epicenter of the outbreak in Wuhan, the virus has spread across China and to at least 16 countries globally. More than 170 people had died in China. Some 7,700 had been confirmed as infected, and another 12,000 were under observation. The White House had been given enough information by that time for action to be taken, but it was all ignored or downplayed. Okay, I'm going to finish by returning to someone else born under that 10 Ben energy that I just mentioned. Just before I do that, I should also mention or provide the reminder that the days of this Trisina are highlighted, as always, in my My Account of Days horoscope blog at whitepoppress.ca. This horoscope blog can also be accessed through mayacalendararts.com, where you can find earlier podcasts, information on Maya Calendrix, some posts on topics such as birth dates and energy cycling, and information on such things as coaching services and personalized artworks. Options for working directly with me in terms of exploring how these energies may work within your own lives are also included on that Maya Calendar Arts site. There are many different ways in which to work with these energies, and as you've seen through this podcast and blog, I often provide examples of how these energies tie in with events and work in other people's lives. But until you actually start working with them personally, much will be missed. And of course, you have to have a good sense of the energies themselves in order to know what to look for. Feel free, if you wish, to contact me if you have any questions. Contact information is in the websites, as well as information on subscribing to the horoscope blog. Okay, back to 10 Ben. This is the Maya birth energy of the famed Swiss psychologist and psychoanalyst Carl Gustav Jung, who was a prolific writer who introduced the world to many key ideas associated with analytical psychology, including the idea of the ego and the concept of synchronicity. His research and work covered many different fields, including world theologies, alchemy, the arts, and even politics. I want to share something that he wrote in 1931 that seems to speak directly to what we're dealing with today. But I'll preface this with some comments that he made just prior to this, in 1931, where he observed that, quote, "the old criticisms that America is too uniform, too speedy, and too external are all true. What is more devastating is that these evils are being taken by the inhabitants of the United States as good standards to be imitated. What is good for some is a poison for most others. The result is that in such centers of speed and uniformity as New York State, there are today, as his statistical examination showed in 1931, as many beds in asylums as there are in all other capitals combined. He followed this with his thoughts on the topic of America Must Say No, an essay found in a book called C.G. Jung Speaking, which includes interviews and encounters. It was edited by William McGuire and R.F.C. Hull and published by Princeton University Press. This is the passage that I will convey where he was talking about the idea of America Must Say No. So I start from here. Quote, "The tempo of America is being taken as a norm to which life should be directed. In the world today, America stands on one side. With its often enviable standard of living slogan before its eyes, and Russia on the other side, also uniformly conscious of a present standard of poverty. Both countries are today's great forces. It is, of course, quite impossible to think that these two diverse natures of America and Russia could merge or would merge. They would fight out their differences to the death. Europe stands between Russia and America as a refuge of that individualism which is necessary to the leading of a happy life, an individualism more or less different in each case, but an individualism opposed to the uniformity of both Russia and America, and an individualism necessary if we are to satisfy our great unconscious and primary mind, which warns us of our misdirections and finally, to save us, fosters neuroses. New York is only one glaring example of what the prevailing notions in America do to the general nature of people. In other states like California, where not so much attention is paid to people's foolishness, the insane are not so easily separated. And throughout America, there are thousands suffering from sick souls who are never quite hospital cases. What America needs in the face of the tremendous urge towards uniformity, desire of things, the desire for complications in life, for being like one's neighbors, for making records, etc., is one great healthy ability to say no. To rest a minute and realize that many of the things being sought are unnecessary to a happy life, and that trying to live exactly like one's successful neighbor is not following the essentially different dictates, possibly of a widely different underlying personality, which a person may possess and yet consciously try to rid himself of, the conflict always resulting in some form, sooner or later, of a neurosis, sickness, or insanity. We are awakening a little to the feeling that something is wrong in the world, that our modern prejudice of overestimating the importance of the intellect and the conscious mind might be false. We want simplicity. We are suffering in our cities from a need of simple things. We would like to see our great railroad terminals deserted, the streets deserted, a great peace descend upon us. These things are being expressed in thousands of dreams, women's dreams, men's dreams, the dreams of human beings, all having much the same collective, primal, unconscious mind, the same in the Central African Negro I have lived among, and the New York stockbroker, as it is in our dreams that the body makes itself aware to our mind. The dream is, in large part, a warning of something to come. The dream is the body's best expression, in the best possible symbol it can express that something is going wrong. The dream calls our mind's attention to the body's instinctive feeling. If man doesn't pay attention to these symbolic warnings of his body, he pays in other ways. A neurosis is merely the body's taking control, regardless of the conscious mind. We have a splitting headache, we say, when a boring society forces us to quit it, and we haven't the courage to do so with full freedom. Our head actually aches. We leave. When whole countries avoid these warnings and fill their asylums, become uniformly neurotic, we are in great danger. The last war, I thought, had taught us something. Seemingly not. Our unconscious wish for deserted places, quiet, inactivity, which now and then is being expressed in the heart of our great cities by a lyrical outbreak of some poet or madman, may project us against our conscious wills into another catastrophe from which we may never recover. We may gas our lives out, and then we will have deserted refuges and none of us left to sit and dream in the sun. Unquote. Again, from his essay titled America Must Say No, and that was from 1931. Incredibly prophetic. Let's not gas our lives out, and let us no longer be gaslighted by people who want only to destroy. Let's find some way to get ourselves out of this mess so we can once again sit and dream in the sun. Until then, be well, keep safe, and start sweeping. Love to you all.